This is the voice of the Trumpet Magazine. News, economy, politics, trends, discovery, health, family, the Bible, the future. This is Trumpet Hour.
Hello there, and thanks for listening in today. I'm Joel Hilliker. Have you noticed the gas prices? I filled my tank the other day. It cost me over $60. That might not sound like a whole lot for our listeners outside of America, but this is a lot of money in for gas in America. My family's looking for ways we can cut down on our trips into town and cut back on our gas consumption. Dwight Falk mentioned on the Trumpet Daily Radio Show the other day of a trunker paying over $1,000 to fuel up his rig. And of course, that hits prices of goods all through the country. One reason for the high gas prices is this war in Ukraine. It's boosted the price of oil substantially, and it could do so for some months to come. The Biden administration really seems unconcerned about this. In fact, there are some on the left who are happy that energy prices are high, but it really could drive the United States into recession and have ripple effects throughout the global economy. We're going to hear a report from Trumpet writer Andrew Miller about this. A related story from Europe in our second segment. Europe is even more dependent on Russian energy than America is. European leaders want to punish Russia for invading Ukraine by boycotting Russian gas. But this would really come at a high cost. Germany in particular has been building a strong relationship with Russia that makes striking back at it very complicated. We're going to look at the politics of energy and war between Russia and European nations. We'll hear a report from Josue Michels about that. For our third segment, we will switch gears to talk about the benefits of exercise. Obviously, exercise has a lot of wonderful health benefits, but we'll have a conversation with personal trainer and holistic nutritionist York Mardian about how the habits you form in exercising and strengthening your body can also have wonderful effects on your business and work success. And then for the last word on today's show, we'll talk about the importance of taking fullest possible advantage of today. But to start today's show, gas prices. They are high and rising, as we will now hear in this report from Andrew Miller.
Russia's invasion of Ukraine could seriously hurt the United States economy. America's benchmark crude surged 8% to over $103 per barrel the day Russian tanks rolled across the border into Ukraine. That was the highest price since Russia annexed Ukraine's Crimean Peninsula 6 years ago, and prices have gone up by more than $10 a barrel since then. The average price for a gallon of gasoline has topped $4 for the first time in over a decade, and economic analysts are predicting gasoline prices will remain above $4 per gallon into the summer. The Biden administration sanctioned Russia's energy industry yesterday, and that could push oil prices up to over $125 a barrel and gasoline prices up over $5 per gallon very soon. Americans are already struggling with inflation rates at a 30-year high, so higher fuel prices could stall economic growth as people spend more money on fewer goods. Axios has published unverified reports that Biden may try to convince Saudi Arabia to pump more oil in a bid to drive down international fuel prices. But there has been no public discussion over reversing Biden's ban on oil drilling on federal lands. Some radical leftists may even be happy that Biden's invasion of Ukraine is driving up energy prices. On February 28th, Energy Secretary Jennifer Granholm emphasized that America needs to transition away from oil and gas and towards green energy. Granholm announced a commitment from over 90 companies and organizations to reduce their carbon emissions by burning less oil and gas to accomplish this goal. Rising gasoline prices and massive increases in home heating and cooling costs may be part of the Biden administration's overall strategy. Remember how Barack Obama lectured Americans in 2008 about their energy usage? He said, we can't drive our SUVs and eat as much as we want and keep our homes at 72 degrees all the time, whether we're living in the desert or living in the tundra, and just expect that every other country will say, okay, you guys, go ahead and keep using 25% of the world's energy, even though you only account for 3% of the world's population. In other words, Obama believes Americans need to consume a smaller share of the world's energy. Driving up oil and gas prices is a fantastic way to force Americans to do this, whether they want to or not. So although Democrats may try to temporarily reduce gas prices before this year's midterm elections, their long-term goal is to make gasoline unaffordable so both companies and individuals will reduce their carbon footprint and their standard of living. This is why Obama and Biden have canceled America's Keystone Pipeline and restricted domestic oil drilling while supporting Russia's Nord Stream pipeline and financing offshore drilling projects in nations like Brazil. These decisions are not really about the environment. They're about making energy more expensive in the United States and cheaper in other parts of the world. This strategy has already weakened America and empowered Russia at the expense of the Ukrainian people. It has been remarkably successful in forcing Americans to reduce their standard of living. According to the U.S. Energy Information Agency, U.S. per capita energy consumption has dropped to the lowest level since 1965, primarily due to rising fuel costs and economic responses to the COVID-19 pandemic. Only 4 months ago, Obama gave a speech at the 26th United States Climate Change Conference, admitting the fight to reduce carbon emissions is, quote, not just about raw numbers. This is not about science. This is about politics. It's about culture. It's about morality. It's about the human dynamic. How do we work together to get a big thing done? It's about participation and it's about power. Then, after admitting climate change isn't about the data, Obama told young people around the world, I want you to stay angry. I want you to stay frustrated. Channel that anger. Harness that frustration. Keep pushing harder and harder for more because that's what's required to meet this challenge. So although Obama may or may not be happy about Putin's invasion of Ukraine, he is probably quite pleased about how rising energy costs are fundamentally transforming the American economy by forcing people to drive less and adjust their thermostats. More than 70 years ago, the late Herbert W. Armstrong foretold this radical assault on the United States and its standard of living in a startling January 1949 Plain Truth article titled The Plain Truth About Communism. And here's what he wrote in that article. He says, the real goal of communist plotters is the violent overthrow of the United States and British Empire. Why? They are the real capitalist nations. We possess nearly three-fourths of the world's capital, its developed and usable resources and wealth. The plain truth, known by so few, is that we possess greater wealth and national resources than any other nation ever did, because Almighty God has given us this wealth in fulfillment of his birthright promises to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And communism is the devil's plot, through its demon-inspired human tools, to take from us the greatest national and economic blessings God ever conferred on any people. Now, Barack Obama was mentored by the radical card-carrying communist Frank Marshall Davis, and he has been vocal about his desire to confiscate the capital God gave the modern-day descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob and redistribute it to the rest of the world. But God promises that he will temporarily save America from this radical communist onslaught so that people have a chance to repent of the sins that allowed this radical left to take over. In the meantime, Americans need to set their financial house in order and prepare to greatly reduce their standard of living.
This is the voice of the Trumpet News Magazine. You're listening to Trumpet Hour.
Europe is even more dependent on Russian energy than America is. After the attack on Ukraine, European leaders are calling for a boycott of Russian energy, but this would come at a high cost, as we will now hear in this report from Josue Michels.
Yes, that's why there are many that commonly call for Europe to stop its imports from Russia. For obvious reasons, they allow Russian President Vladimir Putin to strangle the Ukraine. But German Chancellor Olaf Scholz called the energy supply from Russia essential. He said, quote, Europe's supply of energy for heat generation, mobility, power supply, and industry cannot be secured in any other way at the moment. He also said, the supply is of essential importance for the provision of public services and the daily lives of citizens. Europe has exempted energy supplies from Russia from sanctions. All our steps are designed to hit Russia sensitively and to be sustainable over the long term, end of quote. In other words, the crippling sanctions that could have immediately stopped Russia's advances cannot be implemented. Millions of Ukrainians suffer because of it. Thousands have already died. In the early days of the Ukraine invasion, Germany was accused of preventing serious sanctions, such as cutting Russia off from SWIFT, the main payment method used by businesses around the world. Last week, Germany approved the exclusion of certain Russian banks. However, the banks involved with Russia's gas exports are exempt from the sanctions. Europe did have other options that would have made it less dependent on Russia. German news articles pointed out that European gas production has been falling for years as nations like the Netherlands cut back production, that's domestic production, as a step against climate change. The European Union was able to supply just under a quarter of its consumption for its own gas sources in 2015, but only 9% last year. The United States has cut domestic oil and gas production for similar reasons under the Biden administration. So one might say the Ukraine became the victim of the fight against climate change. But there's more behind this action. The Trump administration offered Europe liquefied natural gas as an alternative, which it rejected, claiming it was too expensive at the time. Instead, Europe trusted Putin. Now the average consumer pays for this decision at a gas station, and Ukrainians pay for it with their lives. Former United States President Donald Trump publicly rebuked Germany's decision to buy a massive amount of gas from Russia. Here's what Donald Trump said in 2018 at a meeting with NATO's Secretary General.
I think it's very sad when Germany makes a massive oil and gas deal with Russia where you're supposed to be guarding against Russia and Germany goes out and pays billions and billions of dollars a year to Russia.
Indeed, Germany paid Europe's historic bully in order to save a few euros. In turn, Germany has now pledged to spend billions on its own defense to protect itself against that same bully. Trumpet editor-in-chief Gerald Fluey warned in 2018 that Germany's dependence on Russian gas is not an accident. He said, quote, in recent years, as gas reserves in the North Sea have declined, European nations have grown more and more dependent on Russia for their gas supplies. Russia has taken advantage of this situation several times by weaponizing its energy, cutting gas supplies when it wants to pressure European states for political or economic reasons. End of quote. Before the Ukraine invasion, Russian gas suppliers allowed European reserves to run low, making it impossible for European nations to cut off Russian gas imports. At the same time, Russian troops amassed on Ukrainian's border. But Europe ignored all the warning signs. For years, Europe has known its dependence on Russian gas, and what it meant for Eastern Europe. Even after Russia invaded the Crimean Peninsula, Europe continued to pursue its controversial Nord Stream 2 project with Russia. The signs of a Russian invasion were there all along, Mr. Fluey explained in his 2018 article, quote, Nord Stream and Nord Stream 2 are key components of Putin's plan to tighten his grip on nations in Eastern Europe that used to be part of the Soviet Empire. Since these pipelines travel directly from Russia to Germany, they enable Putin to shut off gas supplies to nations in Eastern Europe, Ukraine, Poland, and the Baltic nations, while keeping supplies flowing to Germany. This places a sharp edge on Putin's energy weapon. To the former Soviet nations that he is determined to bring back under Russia's power, he can say, either obey Russia or suffer cold winters, with no gas to heat your homes. This is why Eastern Europe tried to prevent Russia and Germany from building the first Nord Stream pipeline. They knew it would give Russia more leverage against them. But Moscow and Berlin built it anyway. Now the second pipeline will boost that leverage considerably. End of quote. The flow of Russian gas through Nord Stream 2 has now been temporarily postponed, but Nord Stream 1 already provides Germany with the gas it needs to heat its homes. The second pipeline would have allowed it to distribute gas to other European nations. Even Germany's recent plans suggesting less dependence on Russian gas appear to be half-hearted. Focus noted on March 4th, quote, the strategic purpose of liquefied gas for 1.5 billion euro is intended to make Germany less dependent on Russian supplies. But no one knows where the replacement gas will come from. The punchline, one of the suppliers could be Russia, of all places, end of quote. When Ukraine demanded defense weapons prior to the invasion, Germany approved the delivery of mere 5,000 helmets. Germany has since approved more weapons for Ukraine, in addition to 1,000 anti-tank missiles and 500 Stinger missiles. Germany also wanted to send 2,700 Strela missiles. This became another scandal when it was revealed that a large number of the Strela missiles in the Bundeswehr's stocks were not only completely obsolete, but also no longer usable, as Spiegel Online reported. The delivery, therefore, has been delayed, while Ukraine is suffering. Germany's slow, half-hearted support has been part of the reason why Russia's invasion of Ukraine occurred. The question arises, has Germany purposely lingered so long so Russia's invasion would be irreversible? This cooperation between Germany and Russia has already proved fatal, but we likely haven't seen the last of it. Mr. Fluey wrote, history shows that in between wars, Germany and Russia often work together, most infamously just before World War II. The two made a deal in which Adolf Hitler's Germany basically said to Joseph Stalin's Russia, stay out of it, Russia, and we will take over Europe. Then the two of us can split up Poland and other countries between ourselves. End of quote. The borderlines have since shifted, but we can clearly see core European nations rallying around Germany in the recent crisis, while Belarus and Ukraine fall into Russia's hands, with Germany's apparent approval. And this is just the beginning of where this cooperation is leading. In the end, the main victim of this partnership will be America.
Thank you very much for that, Josue. It's interesting that this is taking place against a backdrop of Germany actually increasing its arms expenditure and trying to beef up its defense against Russia, its military spending. There are underlying realities that you're describing here of their dependence on Russian energy that they can't really escape. You have two very strong, competing, and seemingly totally contradictory national interests on Germany's part. How do you reconcile those two things?
Yes, so the German-Russian relations, they've always been quite complex historically and today. So it's always very hard to see what actually Germany plans to do, what Russia plans to do. But the recent Ukraine crisis really has helped us understand more what's going on. And when we look at history, Adolf Hitler cooperated a lot with Russia, his military generals cooperated, and they were building up their military at the same time. They were drawing the lines between themselves, they were dividing Poland. But all the time, Hitler warned against Russia, and he motivated the German people who feared Russia to arm, and in the end, he marched against Russia. So today, too, we see very complex relationships, but they are really helping each other to build the empire they want. They are not friends, but they have strategic purposes for this relationship. And just the fact that Germany wasn't willing to pay the 2% to NATO, which would have protected itself against Russia, which would have put Russia at bay. Instead, they have been buying gas from Russia, fueling the Russian war machine, which is controversial, which is very opposite to what the US administration demanded. It's opposite to what you would think if you really fear Russia. Why would you help that power arm itself? But if you understand that they both have goals to arm, then you see what's going on here more clearly. And even Mr. Flui in his 2018 article said, right now Germany isn't paying its dues to NATO, but they themselves have goals to arm. He said, quote, but Bible prophecies about the next resurrection of the Holy Roman Empire show that Germany will soon be spending substantially more on its military and not within any kind of US-led framework. So the recent pledge from Germany to spend more on its military can be seen in that context. Germany uses the fear of Russia to motivate Germany to overcome its pacifist nature. All along, they helped Russia to come to this point. So they built up Russian military to then now use that fear of Russia to build up its own military.
Well, that's an interesting way of looking at it. The idea that Germany is essentially benefiting from the Russian threat rising up the way that it is, that this is basically a pretext that they can use to accomplish what some German leaders have been wanting to accomplish all along.
Yes, there have been military generals in the past in Germany that even made that point. We need a strong Russia. We need a strong Russia in Europe. Otherwise, you have so many small European nations, they would not come together without that fear of Russia. They would not spend on their military without that fear of Russia. So we really see that it was by design, and I understand it's complex to look at the current situation and to see how it will unfold, but we really have to have prophecy guiding us, and prophecy explains it just exactly as Mr. Flui explained in his article, Germany and Russia's Secret War Against America. So this article really helps us understand what's going on. Without it, the situation is really too complex. History helps us understand as well, but we really need the addition of Bible prophecy to look through the deceit. And in a few years from now, we see that prophecy will have been the right thing to look to.
Very interesting. We've been talking with trumpet writer Josue Michels about Europe's dependence on Russian gas, and particularly the relationship between Germany and Russia. He's written an article called Europe's Dependence on Russian Gas. You can check it out at thetrumpet.com. We'll link to that in the show notes for the program today, as well as Gerald Fleury's article from a few years back, Germany and Russia's Secret War Against America. Go check it out for the prophetic understanding of this remarkable development. We thank you very much, Josue.
Thanks for having me again.
This is Trumpet Hour with Joel Hilliker.
Exercising regularly offers many wonderful health benefits, but did you know that the habits you form in exercising and strengthening your body can also have wonderful effects on your business and your work success? To talk about this, we have via Skype from his office in British Columbia, holistic nutritionist and personal trainer, Jörg Mardian. Hello, Jörg.
Hello.
Talk about this for us. How does fitness set up habits for success in other areas in our lives?
Right. So the correlation does sound a little strange, but if you look at it in a little deeper way, habitual fitness, it brings about increased life achievement. So in fact, it's the primary foundation of almost every successful lifestyle entrepreneur and CEO on the planet. And few people understand that. And there's a lot of hard work and tenacity and time involved in the process, of course. But, you know, people look at fitness and they look at it as, I'm going to look good. I'm going to lose weight. So it's sort of a superficial way to look at fitness. It's a way to look at it. But if you examine it, people tend to eat healthier and they have fewer sick days at work as well. Once they're exercising, they have an ability to focus more. They have improved confidence, work performance. There's time management skills. And that all comes from a University of Georgia study. And these are traits that are valued at companies that are looking for increased work production. They had this, there was an executive search company that looked at 1,300 executives who earned more than $100,000 annually. So, you know, pretty successful people. And when they were asked to describe their perceptions of weight and work, 75% said that good physical fitness is critical for career success at the executive level. You know, 17% in contrast said that staying in shape is a nice goal, but secondary. So the majority agreed that, it was something to work towards.
Three out of four people, that's a big majority.
That's right. And these responses, they do more than just mirror this obsession we have with body image. You know, instead of focusing on just physical stamina and mental acuity, you know, it actually leads to better work performance. And it's worked well for giants in the field, even. Like Richard Branson is a well-known name. He founded a 400 company conglomerate. And in his blog, he said, I seriously doubt I would have been as successful in my career. And he mentioned his personal life. If I hadn't placed an importance on my health and fitness, you know, so I found that very inspiring. And you have to keep in mind that this man struggled with an extremely poor academic track record early in life, and he has dyslexia. So, but he kept his mind fixed on his goals, and somehow, you know, he's gone, space travel, deep sea exploration, music, cell phones. I mean, he's touched almost everything. And he's accomplished probably 1,000 times more than the average Joe. Mm-hmm. And he credits a lot of that to fitness. And I thought that was just wonderful. So to me, it's exciting to see that fitness can be undertaken by anyone. And it can reap such massive rewards.
So looking at, you're talking about this study that showed a correlation between business success and fitness. You're talking about specific instances of high-profile businessmen who prioritized fitness and actually attributed some of their success to that. What are some specific mental traits, as you've looked into this, or specific physical attributes that you see in people who prioritize their fitness that correlates into greater business success?
Yeah, so if you really dig down, if you look into this, it really does get exciting. I mean, there's so much more to it. So I put together five basic principles, but there's, hundreds or perhaps thousands, you know. But you want to just look at the five basic ones that stood out to me. So the first one to me is that exercise builds a lot of confidence. I mean, when you think about when you're working out and you're pushing past your pain threshold, you know, repeatedly, that means your comfort zone takes on a new level of stamina and mental ability. And that means you're going to be a lot more confident person who being able to push your body to take on new challenges, maybe important projects or difficult situations in a workplace. Mm-hmm. You've pushed your body before. And if you're exercising, you know, like I said, you have good eating habits. Chances are you're not going to run into those health issues. That brings about confidence. You feel better. You're stronger. You have this sense of accomplishment. And these are all like virtues that are creating confidence in yourself as a worker or as an executive moving up to that executive level. The second one that I looked at is discipline. And discipline is extremely important when you look at the bridge between fitness and the workplace or a business. You know, a regular fitness routine teaches discipline and consistency. I mean, that's well known. And it shows that you're willing to do what it takes to achieve goals. So if you think about it, it requires time, it requires energy, it requires motivation to exercise regularly. Most people won't do that. That's a fact. And it requires that you build a routine and you plan ahead. So especially with a busy lifestyle, I mean, that makes it hard to exercise. I hear that all the time. In other words, you prove that you're good at reflecting on what needs to be done with training times and with your food intake, with repetitions and sleep patterns. You're going to need some discipline for all that. And basically what you're doing is you're making exercise non-negotiable. Mm-hmm. You know, you're committed to what you're doing, to your growth. It helps you to be comfortable with being uncomfortable. You know, comfortable with setting goals, removing temptations, weaknesses, excuses. I mean, those are big issues that require discipline. Now, you're not going to see the fruits of your labor right away, so that requires consistency as well. And the odds are great that if, you know, with this learned behavior, it's going to carry over into the workplace or applying that discipline to whatever job or business that you have.
It's an interesting correlation that you're describing. I'm just thinking about personal experience, and I do feel like in some ways there is a requirement to keep your eye on the big picture from the standpoint of what are you trying to accomplish in your life. And I feel like it is easy to get derailed in a number of ways. It's easy to get distracted by things and to allow yourself to be pulled off onto more side issues. And in some ways, I think there are some people where that can even happen with their fitness, that becomes sort of a predominant goal rather than being a means to an end, that this is something that you have to kind of keep in perspective so that you're able to do more and perform better in other areas of your life. It seems like that correlation, if you're making those connections yourself, the discipline that you gain from being consistent and sticking with a program, developing that self-discipline in that one area will carry over if you're kind of keeping that big view in mind. It's not necessarily automatic, but it's something that is definitely there if you're making that effort.
Yeah, you have to continuously work at it. I mean, people set limitations for themselves, right? And they set the bar low. In some areas it's high, in some areas it's low, but it's really about how we look at things. You know, I was just talking with a client today, and I said, you know, most people look at things very negatively. You need to look at things positively. Your limitations, and that really segues into my next point, you know, you can shatter limitations, absolutely crush them, if you understand what you're really doing and the value that exercise has. You know, you're increasing not only the strength of the body, but of the mind. You know, it's largely our brain now, rather than our body, that tells us when it's time to quit, when we're exercising, when we get into that pain zone. Training frequently exposes us to psychological pain of effort. I'm sure as a runner, you've experienced that. And that tells us when to quit. You know, but we get accustomed to it and pushing through agony if we keep at it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's that, can I do more today than I've done yesterday? Yeah, I've done it before. You know, I've exceeded my limitations today by 10%. So in that sense, you know, new research shows us that the brain isn't just a bystander. It acts as a sort of central governor with a primary responsibility for performance. The brain is what keeps you going. Your body's going to want to quit because you get that lactic acid, you get that fatigue, you get everything's going to scream at you to stop. Don't, you know, if you have some more in you, do it. You know, with this thinking, the pain of muscle fatigue is more of an emotion than a reflection of the state of the exerted muscles. So in other words, the muscles are going to scream at you to stop, but we're clearly capable of more effort than we realize.
Mm-hmm.
There was this little experiment I'm not sure what type of a studio it was, but he told his students to stand on one leg, and he said, stand as long as you can. And they did, and then, you know, one by one, they quit. And he says, well, did you do all you could? Did you stand as long as you could? They all said, yes, we did. And he said, well, then why are you still standing? It's a perception. They quit before they collapsed. See, I'm not saying we have to go till we collapse, but he's saying there's more in you,
yeah.
You know? And that teaches us that we can excel beyond the limitations we set for ourselves. And it brings about an unbelievable change of perspective. We all know we've been in situations where we require that 10, 20, 30, 40% more.
Yeah.
We need it, you know? So fully believing allows you to overcome what you once thought was an impossibility. It shatters your limitations.
So exercise builds our confidence. It builds discipline. It shatters our limitations. What else is it doing for us that's going to benefit our work?
Well, there's an important point is life balance. You know, like the justification for not engaging in regular exercise is many. And there's, you know, there's a lot of times there's not enough work or a time for work and fitness. But exercise, when we say we don't have enough time, it actually enhances the work-life balance, you know, even though it may seem counterintuitive. What you're actually doing is you're working on reducing stress and anxiety levels through exercising. And really what you're doing there is that's tantamount to an expansion of your time, and that leads to greater effectiveness at work and confidence in the ability to balance work with your personal life. We all know that we can come home from work, it's been a busy day, and we're stressed. You know, and that leads into the next day. We're tired and you know, we're not getting done as much as we can. But if you take that extra hour and you go and exercise at night, that reduces that. Your mind is in a better state to be able to cope with the next day. And perhaps that's a simplistic way of looking at it, but it works. Unless you actually do it, you won't experience that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I get so many people saying this is a stress reliever, and they come in and they're just frazzled or in a bad mood. And within 10 minutes, they've forgotten what they were mad at or frazzled at.
Sure. Yeah. All right. That's four of your points. What's the fifth, Jorg?
Well, exercise is linked to financial success. Researchers have found that employees who exercise regularly, at least 3 hours a week, they earn about 9% more than sedentary counterparts. That might not seem like a lot, but in today's world, as everything's creeping up in prices, that's going to work out really good. Even employees who start late if they start an exercise program, they receive a raise, a lot of them. So this goes back to leading by example and being a successful leader, you know, building those fundamental blocks or bringing those fundamental building blocks to the table. You know, you're improving everything about your body, your posture, your energy, your passion, your vitality. And it's how we're perceived. You know, and the boss is going to look at that. He's going to see all of that. And he's going to say, this is a good worker. I'd like to reward this worker. So it's just a way of life that serves you well in a chaotic environment of a busy professional life. It just takes some investing in time. And it's going to, you're going to reap the rewards as your fitness levels increase. You're likely going to start reaping the career rewards.
Very interesting. I imagine that could be motivating for a lot of us who we look at maybe this is an impossible thing to squeeze into the schedule, but we need a little bit of a nudge to go ahead and make it a priority to make sure that we're really investing in our own health and fitness the way that we should. We've been talking with personal trainer and holistic nutritionist Jörg Mardian about how good habits of exercise can actually increase your success in other areas of your life, including your job, your career. He's working on an article that should appear soon at thetrumpet.com on this subject. Thanks again so much, Jörg. Always great to have you on.
It's great to be here.
It's time for today's last word.
A friend of mine wasn't feeling well. Her illness lasted for some time, and she decided to get diagnosed. She was shocked to learn that she had a very aggressive form of cancer. She was told she had weeks or mere days left to live. If you suddenly learned today was your last, how would you react? Could you view your life as a success? If I heard that news, it would be hard not to be stricken with regrets. I should have done this better. I should have devoted more energy to that. I should have squandered less time on this. Jesus Christ tells us, I know your works. When he returns, it says in Matthew 16, he shall reward every man according to his works. If you were measured only by your works up to today, what reward would you receive? Generally, the younger we are, the easier it is to behave as though our days are innumerable. The future always holds promise. One day, I'll climb that mountain. One day, I'll conquer those weaknesses and sins. One day, I'll build that character trait. One day means not today. But what if you only have today? What if you have fewer todays than you think? As you age, those one days become too lates and never dids. And you come to realize how, as it says in 1 Peter 1, all flesh is as grass, and all the glory of man as the flower of grass. All the days of our years pass quickly. They're easily misspent. It says in Psalm 90, so teach us to number our days, that we may apply our hearts unto wisdom. End-of-life situations make us acutely aware of how precious today is. In another case, a man learned he had a deadly condition mere weeks before it claimed his life. And not long afterward, his widow told me that the two of them had treated each of those final days as a gift. She said, the last 3 weeks were the best weeks of our marriage. All those things you get irritated about, suddenly those don't seem so important. We just enjoyed each other. Isn't it a shame that it can take the threat of dying to make us number our days, to awaken us to our mortality, to convince us to value life and cherish what is precious? Another woman I spoke with has a rare and serious condition about which she can do little. It could remain unthreatening indefinitely, or it could kill her at any time. And what is her attitude? She says she's excited, whatever happens. I know a lot of older people who've learned that kind of serene perspective in their sunset years, but this woman is a young mother with small children. She trusts that God is keenly aware of that reality, and she's placing her future and her life in His hands. That takes unusual spiritual maturity. How does God view the death of one of His saints? Well, He says in Psalm 116, verse 15, that it is precious. For the individual whose life is hid in God, death truly does mean the end of a struggle. The next waking moment is glorious godhood. You can see that in 1 Corinthians 15. It calls it a victory. That person will rise in a world where Satan is banished and Christ is king. That world is everything we long for. It's like Christ returning immediately. If you learned you were about to jump straight into that future, wouldn't you be excited? It's as if God is saying, I know you. You have qualified. I'm ready to make you a God being in my family. The more you are using each day, each today, to serve God, the greater works He'll be doing in your life, the greater your reward will be when He grants you eternal life. That's an exciting perspective. That's God's perspective. Of course, we missed loved ones when we lose that day-to-day sharing of life. And even that bespeaks the need to, like that couple, to use each day we do have to express and grow in godly love rather than squandering it with pettiness. Just a few weeks before she received her diagnosis, my friend had no palpable sense of how close to death she was. Then one day she learned she had mere days left. Practically speaking, her period of qualification and judgment was nearly over. The number of talents she had earned was nearly set and measurable, if you want to look at it the way that Christ described it in the parable of talents, Matthew 25. Some of us find out ahead of time we have only a few days left. Some of us don't. The vapor that is your individual physical life could end at any time. So there's only one day you can do anything with, and that day is today. Use this tiny window of time for its real purpose, to love and serve God, to express and grow in godly love, to share your life with your loved ones, to qualify for your eternal position. You and I have no guarantee that there's more than one day left for us to qualify to enter God's family and to secure the greatest possible spiritual reward. That day is the day we're living right now. Pray forgiveness for wasted time, for misspent energy, overlooked opportunity. Stop saying, one day I'll get around to that. That one day is today. I'm Joel Hilliker, and that will do it for today's Trumpet Hour. You can send me any thoughts on today's program to letters@thetrumpet.com. Thanks to my guests, Andrew Miller, Josue Michels, and Jörg Mardian. Thanks to Nick Irwin and Dwight Falk for engineering and production. I'll leave you with this thought from Daniel Greenfield. Adulthood means doing things you don't want to do and discovering that they can make you the person you want to be. Thank you for joining us on Trumpet Hour. Until next time, keep watching your world.
Listening to Trumpet Hour on Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG, and online at kpcg.fm. Understand your world.